One last thing.
Number five is my biggest creature, my biggest creation. She's a monster that swims around and around and around and around and around and protects this island.
Solve the World, a fictional adventure told in 100 episodes. Episode 33, Eden. We made it, Jen. We're free. Miles got us out. Jennifer Free, you're free. You really are. That's not my name. Don't call me that. That moment, which should have brought a rush of relief, did the opposite. As the motor hummed and took the small boat away from the horrible island, Jen stared at her hand, what used to be her hand. Leaving meant a return to reality, but reality still included a Jennifer with no hand. If real life, existence outside of Pish Taco's island, still meant Jen suffered with a painful stump, then maybe it also included a Leviathan. But it wouldn't be the Leviathan of the Rabbi, that man who once counseled Jen to scream in a dream. He wasn't describing a sea monster made by the numbered man. No, that couldn't be what Jen was after all this time. It couldn't be. It couldn't be. It couldn't be. Whatever swam in the deep, whatever circled the depths around that numbered hell, that place with more than 1,000 steps leading towards the abyss, that thing wasn't a guardian. Jen had striven for so long now to find Leviathan because that meant meeting a creature formed to protect the truest purposes of life. Rabbi Itamar Levi had spoken to Jen's heart when he depicted three monsters fashioned by God at the beginning of time. Ziz, a flying monster to protect the skies. Behemoth, the great roamer of the fields. And Leviathan, the unsearchable one of myth and majesty. This Leviathan, if it was real, would be the oldest living creature on Earth. She would know every secret. If the Earth had keys made to hide its knowledge behind old doors, Leviathan knew those keys, was intimate with them. But this devastation, this perversity. What if the Leviathan Jen was destined to find was the one the numbered man cocked up in his wicked little mind? Silently and desperately, Jennifer Dash prayed. She didn't know who to pray to, whether to God or Zeus or Atticus Further. The only power Jen knew was real, the only supernatural event in her life, was the prophecy Rabbi Itamar Levi gave to her when she locked herself in the bathroom, hiding from the terrors of Tiff. The rabbi saved her once, gave her a key to unlocking a certain future. Maybe he would come to her aid again. This is how the prayer in Jen's mind went. Rabbi, I know. Feels like all I've ever wanted was to see Leviathan. But don't you forget, you did this to me. You put these thoughts in my head. You got me excited for something I never knew existed. But not now, Rabbi. Please, not now. Not like this. Save me from seeing her now. I can't bear it. Is there nothing beautiful left in the world? I have to believe there's something pure. Leave Leviathan pure for me. Come on, please. Jen repeated the prayer in her mind over and over. Until, at great last, the island was out of sight. I made sure there would be no Leviathan that day. As for the boat itself, there wasn't much to do. Neither lady had much appetite for conversation. There wasn't even much point in debating which way to steer the boat. East was the only option. If the little boat had enough gas, it could maybe make it to the west coast of Peru. Aside from the motor and two oars, there did indeed happen to be two large cylinders of gas. Extra gas. They'd at least be able to make a shot at it. There was, however, no food or water. In their current state, though, neither Jen nor Lex worried about that specific concern. What did concern both women was the only other artifact left in the boat, a tape player. Maybe 3 hours into the journey, Lex pressed play.
Hello?
Lex pressed stop and threw the tape down. We should destroy it, Jen said. No, we don't have to listen to it, but it's proof, evidence that what we experienced was real. The thought had never occurred to Jen that people might not believe their story. What's not to believe about an island made up of underground tunnels and mutants led by some sort of mad scientist? The sun went away. Jen shivered. Night had fallen. Darkness returned. But it wasn't the same darkness, for the whole host of heaven was on display. The caves never had stars. Darkness without stars is a terrible thing. On this night, Jin stared up at the stars, sighing with a feeling of both relief and regret. What do you think he did? Jin asked Lex. Miles? Yeah. How do you think he pulled the veil over the numbered man's eyes? I don't know. He's Miles Fah. He does stuff like that. You're really okay with just not knowing? Lex, Miles punched the crap out of you. I'll take a beating any day of the week if it gets me out of weird, trippy, solitary confinement. Seriously, you have no idea? I mean, I don't know. The numbered man knew our names, but I don't think he was wiretapping us. I don't think there was any electricity down there at all. But the speakers? Just a classic megaphone, like playing telephone with cups and strings. So, how then did he know our names? That must have been what Miles knew that we didn't. Jen tried to put the pieces of the puzzle together, but they didn't fit. The only thing that kept circling around in her brain was when Miles said,
"Walk silently. Don't say a word. Miles remembers the way. Drown yourselves in the spa. Be careful to say nothing. That's the only way you two can be together forever."
Why did he speak in third person? Miles didn't go with them to the spa, so what did it matter that he remembered the way?
Should we go back for him? Jen said meekly.
And do what? Lex answered. We're no help until we first help ourselves. Later in the night. Lex, is your mother really a Selkie?
I'd like to think so. I'd like to think she didn't just abandon me for no reason. I'd like to believe that although men create horrible things like I saw in that classroom, there are also things at the other end of the spectrum. If there are things this gross, then shouldn't there also be things on the other side? You know, pure things, good things, extraordinary things?
Around dawn, Lex eyed a spot on the horizon. They motored towards it. Within an hour, it was apparent what it was. Another island. Jen's stomach churned. They had to go. They needed to be brave. The island might be small. There might be no one on it. In which case, they could hunt for coconuts or fruit or scavenge for anything that might help them live longer. Or, the island is bigger than they expect and there's actually help there. Or, it's just another lair. Another hole with another Pishtaco. Even from far away, however, it was clear this island was different. It was lush. Green. So green. Unlike Pishtaco's island, this one looked exactly like every remote tropical island paradise that every John Q. castaway was ever lost on. Except, as they neared land, there were people waiting. Dozens, maybe. All with their hands up, staring at them from the shoreline. The sun, though, was bouncing off those people harshly. They were so bright.
and white. A little closer now. They weren't people. They were statues. Lux and Jen glanced at each other, each entranced with something between fascination and fear.
Hola! Hola!
A little girl's voice bounded out towards the small boat. For the quickest of moments, Jen entertained the fear that it was the statues themselves that were calling out to them. They'd seen so many unexplained phenomena. Why not talking stones? Hell, a friggin' griffin had snatched Jen's hand. A griffin, for Pete's sake! But no, the statues were not singing out to the sea-bound nomads. It was a little girl. She was coming up to the sand from the jungles of the island. The girl's dress was primitive. She looked to actually be sporting a reed-based skirt. But it was clean, and the girl appeared well-fed and happy. The statues, too, they were happy. Every 15 feet or so in either direction on the sandy shoreline, statues of men, women, and children stood cheering the newcomers. They were smiling, welcoming statues. As they set feet on dry ground, the little girl grabbed Lex's hand, and at once the two were speaking. Jen couldn't pick up on it, it was all in Spanish, but the girl and Lex were smiling and laughing as they spoke. The girl took Lex's hand and led her past the jungle line of the island. Lex smiled back at Jen and motioned for her to follow. She did. What follows was a miracle. Swiss Family Robinson was Jen's favorite film as a kid. Riding ostriches around always seemed fun, but it was the architecture of island life that caught Jen's imagination. And that, friends, is exactly what Jen found on this new island. Pulleys and suspension bridges, tree houses and conveyor belts, a certifiable mansion on a lost island. But more than just that, you could somehow feel the love. Love overflowing from the footbridges and the cabinets carved into trees. The nooks and crannies shouted out, "We belong to a loving world, a careful earth." The little girl led Lex, and by proxy Jen as well, to a little amphitheater that seemed to be at the center of the architectural community.
Mama! Papa! Hermano! Hermanas!
The little girl squealed out, and doors opened. Doors high above Jen. Doors that the sun smiled down on. Homes built under the sun's loving care. A few minutes later, and Jen and Lex were being welcomed, here as kissed on the lips, by the inhabitants of the island. A quick count revealed three little kids, including the girl whom they first met and two sisters, an older girl, maybe 13, and a boy, probably 15. Then there came one who Jen supposed was the mother of the kids, a beautiful woman, a breathtakingly stunning lady, perfectly formed and glistening in the sunlight. And then finally, an elderly man Jen suspected was the woman's father. They all spoke in the round, with various introductions happening fast and heavy. When Lex could get a word in, she tried translating for Jen. But when the food came, a coconut mush on top of lettuce-based salad, the two sailors munched and listened in silence. It was kind of comforting for Jen to not understand what this family was saying. The unfolding situation allowed her to relax, to breathe in the luxury of the moment. And to top it off, there was so much smiling. Oh, how good it was to see smiles, to hear laughter, and to work the muscles in her face as she beamed back in the stringless hospitality. A few moments later, the old man spoke to Jen directly, in English, grinning.
Hello, Jennifer.
Hi.
Thank you for your kindness. In this place, in our home, it is easy to be kind. Would you take a walk with me? I have something I'd like to share with you.
Jaded by the recent events of Jennifer Dash's life, a hesitation welled up inside of her. What did this old man want from her? Why did he want to, quote, share something with her? What sort of demonry was he concealing?
It is okay. Your friend will be at ease in the company of the rest. She will be more relaxed not having to translate for you. Come, I will speak to you in your language.
Lex laughed, glancing over at Jen. Lex was at the center, both physically and conversationally, of the entire family. These were joyous people, not people that needed anything, not urchins, not vampires that suck the life out of you for their amusement. If it was a trap, then it was a better one than the numbered man had ever dreamt of. If there was any romance left in Jen, any hope that the world could be made right, or better yet, was right in certain places, she needed to trust this old paterfamilias. She took his hand and let him lead on.
As he slowly led her through the dense jungle, Jen chuckled to herself. Before she set out to solve the world, Jen had never kissed anyone on the lips in her whole life. That's what made this seduction by D'Anconia so painful.
It was her first. Since then, she'd been kissed by Robles. Though it was passionate, Jen instinctively knew then, and later clearer still in retrospect, that Robles' kiss was a goodbye serenade, and Jen was merely a placeholder. She could have been any woman. Jorge Robles had a never-ending romantic Don Quixotic view of the world. And knowing he was about to climb aboard his own doom, he had to embrace romance one last time. He'd have kissed elephantitis victim Lizard if she was the one jammed in that stall with him. But now, here on this isolated island, Jen had been smooched on the mouth by, count them, 7 new people. It was nice. These islanders were kinesthetic introducers, and their love was dispersing the perverse memories of Antonio de Anconia. The old man led Jen to a wooden string ladder hanging against a vertical cliff. It was a flimsy thing, flopping around the way those ladders that are thrown off the sides of helicopters do. Still, the old man had a dexterous touch and ascended with relative ease. Jen followed, 3 or 4 notches below him. It was a hard work climbing a loose ladder with only one hand. Jen quickly learned it was necessary to use her mouth as a stabling device whilst ascending. She counted the rungs as she worked to climb past them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 21, 31, 45, 53, 66, 77, 88, 90, 91, 92, 93, 94, 95, 96, 97, 98, 100. Exactly 100 steps. The old man helped Jen onto the top of a cliff. The height made one nauseous. The precipice was so skinny, it didn't allow for really any more than 2 people to sit on top of it at once.
We call this the Philosopher's Stone.
Why? Jen asked.
Because we only come all this way up to think on life or to see who's coming, to see what the future brings.
Oh, Jen realized she didn't know the name of the old man who brought her here. What's your name, and who are you?
Who are you is a much better question than what my name is. Long ago, I was known as Aaron Amaru.
How long have you been on this island, Aaron?
Oh, many, many, many years now.
How'd you find this place?
I was searching for Eden. Before man followed the call of the serpent, you know who I speak of, I think. Before he put his trust in that music. He lived in a garden in a place called Eden.
Did you find it? Eden?
Jennifer, where do you think you are?
Jen took a big breath and looked out from the Eagle's Nest view. The ocean stretched 360 degrees out and away from Jen, pushing itself against the borders of the horizon, maybe hundreds of miles off. Nearly limitless was the view here. Jen thought it then a good idea to look up at the heavens, but doing so brought on a great deal of vertigo, and so she momentarily tried to grab onto the man for comfort and stability, but she grabbed her with her stub arm and managed to lose her balance even more so. But Aaron Amaru took hold of her with both hands, steadying her with care.
This is Eden?
Why not?
So Eden is an island. I found out long ago that Eden can be almost anywhere. Before I came here, I was a vigilant member of the Movimiento de la Izquierda Revolucionaria, or MIR. It's a communist organization. I believed that until everyone was free on Earth, until every last one of us was equal under the eyes of God, then none of us could ever get back to Eden. So I fought. I was a good fighter, too. But in the end, it always ends the same. The lion pride always falls to the newest, youngest fighter. You cannot be the strongest, bravest, fiercest forever. There always comes another. I was ousted by my own people. If the enemy would ever have captured me, if the capitalists would have obtained me, then I would have been MIR's biggest champion, a martyr for all seasons. But I was trapped from inside.
Why are you telling me all this? Jen asked.
It is good to share your story with others. You learn who you are by the details you choose to share. I was exiled. I came to this island in 1978. For many years, I was very sad, lonely. I thought, if the world is full of wicked men, then I will not be a part of it. I spent all my time carving these horrible gargoyles. I wanted them to keep watch for me, to scare off any possible intruders. Then I start coming up on this rock every morning to watch the sunrise. And I started talking to God. And guess what? He talks back.
Jen didn't know how to process this. What did he, say?
Oh, he says lots of things. But the first thing he said to me was, "Aaron, you are not important enough to have a name."
What? This was not what Jen would have supposed a God believer would think God would say to them. Why did he say that?
For a long time, I did not know. I think I do now, but it's a secret I do not wish to share.
Then why did you share it at all? Jen thought.
Over time, God changed me. He helped me to see that it is not people that are evil. No, it's a person. Here, there. It's in their decisions, in their thoughts. But people, no. People is just an idea. Only a person is real. So I carved at the statue some more. I carved a happy child, a happy father, a happy mother. I tried to make the statues as welcoming as possible. The opposite of what they once were.
Did you see them?
Yeah, right away.
They're lovely, Jen said.
Did you feel welcomed by them?
Most certainly.
Good, good. I'm glad to hear it. They do their job well, with honor.
So when you came here, you brought your daughter?
No, no. You see how young my children are. They were not yet even a dream yet when I first landed here.
Oh, then Jen trailed off.
I was on the island many years alone, and even though I enjoyed the company of God and the sunrise and sunsets, I was lonely. Then, one day, God saw my loneliness and said, "It is not good for man to be alone." A boat of travelers came to me, came to the island. They were many, 20 in all, I think. And one of them was so lovely, I could hardly bear it. The rest decided to leave, but God moved her to stay with me. We married each other in the sight of God, right here on the Philosopher's Stone, many years ago. And God has blessed our marriage with 5 beautiful children.
But you're so old.
Ah, now you're getting to what I have to share with you.
That you're old? Jen said.
I can see that just fine. You are a funny child. No, 2 weeks ago, I was sitting on this very stone, talking to God, and he said to me that a girl was coming. He said I would know right away that this girl was the one I was supposed to talk to, because she would be carrying a deep burden in her eyes, though she'd be very young. I petitioned God. I did. I said, "Use one of my children, my daughters, perhaps. Or maybe, God, this is the answer to my son's prayer, that you would bring a wife for him." I said to God, "I am very old. It would be better to use my children for this task." But God said that it must be me.
The old man was silent for a duration, looking perplexed, as if he forgot where he was going with the story. Did he say why? Jen offered.
No, but when I saw that you recently lost your hand, and that I alone of my family speak English, the reason seemed easy to decipher.
Jen was starting to become a bit dismayed. She wanted the old man to get to the point and share whatever it was he was going to share. And all the while, Jen couldn't help but spot and keep her eyes fixed on a speck in the sky near the horizon.
Well, what is it? What did you have to share with me? Just this. And he gave me these words. They are his, not mine.
When the old man said his words, Jen thought of the rabbi once more. He had found her once in her sleep. Maybe he found her again through this old man on this island of Eden.
Because whatever we are, we become more of that over time.
That's it? What does that mean? Jen asked.
In your case, only you can know. But I can tell you what it means to me.
Okay. Jen answered, now only half paying attention. That speck had grown. It was coming their way.
Back when I first came to the island, I was angry at the world. Angry at everything. I thought in isolation I'd get better. I'd naturally become the person I wanted to be. Take away the things that trouble me and I should be all better. But that didn't happen. I got worse, meaner, and more sullen. That is, until I talked to God and he told me I wasn't important enough to have a name.
After that, I realized my decisions and my thought life made me, not the outside world. Everything is in motion, Jennifer. You never just are. You are always becoming more of something. Therefore, the older you are, the more of that thing you naturally become. Thankfully, gold has taught me gentleness, patience, and happiness instead of anger, violence, and stubbornness. Instead of being a person of stubbornness, I get to be more and more a man of kindness, goodness, faithfulness. I'm becoming those things, and I'll be more those things tomorrow than I am today.
That speck was no more speck. It was a helicopter. Upon identifying it, Jen chose to race down the ladder through the forest. She caught Lex, who shared a wide-eyed expression. The helicopter levitated above the sands on the beach. A man threw a ladder down to them. Lex first ran to the boat and grabbed the tape player. Then she ran to the ladder and climbed it up gingerly, yelled out some words at the pilot, then finally signaled down to Jen with a thumbs up. On her way up the precarious ladder, Jen was thankful she had learned that the use of one's mouth is necessary for swinging ladder ascension. It was, once again, a difficult task. But with some help at the end, she got aboard. Once on, the two women smiled and waved down at the Peruvian family Robinson. As they flew off, Jen spied the old man still seated at the top of the island, atop the Philosopher's Stone.
"Who are you?"
Jen shouted at the co-pilot.
"We were sent here on the orders of Miss Babbitt. How did you find us?" "Just following coordinates given to us from Miss Babbitt."
"Where are we going?"
Lex asked.
"Just a few miles onto the mainland."
"Peru?"
"Yeah."
Lex turned to Jen.
"What did the father want to share with you?"
"I'm not sure, but I'm sad to leave. It's a paradise."
"I know,"
Lex responded.
"But they should never have had children."
Jen pondered Lex's cynical response as she anticipated reuniting with her rich mentor, Lilith Babbitt. Solve the World is produced by myself, Dante Stack. Full credit is given to all sound effects and music used in this episode on our show notes page at DanteStack.com. As I do often, I want to wholeheartedly thank those people who have put up their sound effects and music on Creative Commons websites. Thank you for allowing me to use your work. The island hopping days are behind us. Jen and Lex are destined to reunite with what's left of Team Orion. There, along with Lilith Babbitt and her consortium of lawyers and bodyguards, the group will make a plan for the future. Will the Orion set sail again? Will the team try to rescue Miles Fogg? What have Captain Alf, Gadar, Lizard, Sir Isaac, and Father Thomas been up to all these weeks? The second great debate is nearly upon us, but we'll also have to add an ancient book of secrets into the mix. Next time on Solve the World.